ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from Canto 11, Chapter 26, titled the Ayla Gita, text number 5. I am not able to figure out the meter for this. Does anyone know? Anyone like to chant? Yeah, the meter. I'll try them. त्यक्त्वात्मानम् व्रजन्तीम् ताम् नग्ना उन्मतावन् निपः विलपन् अन्वच्काज् जाये घोरे तिष्ठति विक्लवा त्यक्त्वात्मानं व्रजतीं ताम् नग्ना उन्मतवन् निपा विलपन्नं वगाज जाये घोरे तिष्ठेति विक्लवा त्यक्त्वात्मानं व्रजतीं ताम् नग्ना उन्मतवन् निपा विलपन् अन्वगाज्याये घोरे तिष्ठेति विक्लवः त्यक्त्वा अबैंडनिंग आत्मानं हिम व्रजतीं गोइंग अवे ताम अंटू हर नग्नः being naked unmatavat like a madman nipaha the king vilapan crying out anvagat followed jaye o my wife ghore o terrible woman tishtha please stop iti thus speaking viklavaha overwhelmed with distress Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When she was leaving him, even though he was naked, he ran after her just like a madman and called out in great distress, O my wife, O terrible lady, please stop. Purport. As his beloved wife was leaving him, the shocked king was crying out, My dear wife, please think for a moment. Just stop. You terrible lady, can't you stop? Why don't we speak together for a while? Why are you killing me? Thus lamenting, he followed her. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shlakaya Chakshurmurtim Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare So This chapter is titled the Ayla Gita. So this is after previous chapter, which is the three modes of material nature, which is basically an expansion of the Bhagavad Gita. So in the 14th chapter, three modes are covered, and Krishna expands on that subject matter. And there he describes how everything is manifested of the three modes of material nature, which are eventually manifested from the mind. And so the three modes of material nature produce all the objects we see are composed of the three modes of nature. So whether it's the place, the time, the situation, the type of food we eat, the male, female, like that. So, and also towards the end of the last chapter, Krishna glorifies the human form of life. Though the human form of life is temporary, but still Krishna glorifies it. And even at the start of this chapter, Krishna again glorifies the human form of life because it is an opportunity where the living entity can awaken one's real knowledge. That is being a servant of Krishna. So as we understand that the human form of life is actually very, very rare, one has to transmigrate from, 8.4 million species and come to the human form of life. And even amongst the 400,000 species, very few are actually cultured. You see, most of the people are simply interested in eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But of those, very few are interested in self-realization. Manushyanam sahasreshu, kastriya visiddhai. So of those, and you know, many of them take up spiritual life to basically improve their bodily existence. So whether it's a better existence on this plane, in this world, or in heaven. And out of those, very few, actually want to gain liberation, want to get freedom from the pangs of birth and death. And out of so many of them, very few take up the Krishna consciousness, and out of very few of them, very few actually realize the Supreme Absolute Truth. So devotional service is even more rare. So in this chapter, basically Krishna is describing the Ayala Gita to caution us how to be careful in associating with the modes of nature. So in the previous chapters it's been described that how the mode of goodness is very, very favorable for cultivating spiritual life or Krishna consciousness, whereas the lower modes actually pull one down into material existence. So our aim is not simply to be in the mode of goodness, the symptoms of which are increased knowledge and happiness, but actually to transcend even that. So for the aspiring transcendentalists, as is described in the Bhagavatam, money and wealth, nadhanam janam sundarim, these are actually great impediments. Wealth, fame, followers, and women, of a women, men. So these are very powerful allurements of Maya to actually keep us in this material world. And why are we attracted to all these things? As Krishna describes, Ishcha dvesha samuthena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammohan sarga yanti parantapa. That all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities of desire and hate. So when we are separated from our pure knowledge, which is servant of Krishna, then we get covered over by this illusory energy. And as a result of that, one is unable to understand Krishna. So we can see that in the material world, people don't have a proper idea of God. Everyone is confused and they manufacture their own theories. So because they think like God is one of them. And then this illusory energy manifests in desire and hate. So the living entity is trying to become one with Krishna, or in other words, trying to compete with God, or thinking oneself to be God, thinking oneself to be the proprietor, enjoyer, controller, everything. And at the same time, the living entity hates Krishna's instructions. It's like if you give a Bhagavad Gita to somebody on the street, usually they'll come up with so many reasons why they don't want it. Or if you describe Krishna as God, they'll come up with so many reasons why he's not. So the result of being covered by this illusory energy is that one dwells in duality. So this is the victimization of the illusory energy, that when we are covered over by Maya, we are dwelling in duality. So duality means man, woman, heat and cold, honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, fame, infamy, so on and so forth. So this is the duality in which we are caught up. But actually, you know, we all are spirit soul, but this body is a covering. But we identify with the body, and therefore we are attracted by certain things and we are repelled by certain things. So one who is pursuing self-realization, as this chapter describes, should be extremely cautious of the allurements of Maya. This is actually this verse in the 7th canto, chapter 12, text 10, in which the four instructions by Narad Muni to Maharaj Yudhishthira. There it said, as long as a living entity is not completely self-realized, as long he is not independent of the misconception of identifying with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body and senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman. Thus there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. So unless, you know, we are self-realized on the pure Krishna conscious platform, we have to be extremely careful in our dealings. Otherwise, we can very easily fall down, because our intelligence is always bewildered, and we are taking shelter of the mind and senses, which are actually our worst enemy. So this that was Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihastini Shuni Charvash Pakira Pandita Samadarshana. So unless one is a self-realized soul, you know, one will be bewildered by this duality. So a self-realized soul sees Paramatma and the Jivatma together in every body. So it's not bewildered by the different types of dresses. So an example of this is, you see in the Chaitanya Leela is, Pradyumna Mishra, he went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was a Grihastha, and he wanted to hear Krishna Katha, topics related to Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu congratulated him. He's got a human form of life, he wants to hear about Krishna. He said, very nice. He said, but I'm not qualified to speak, you go to Ramananda Rai. And he said, okay. And he went to Ramananda Rai at his house. So there he was greeted by Ramananda Rai's servant. And he said, you take a seat and just wait for a while. Ramananda Rai is a bit busy right now. And he was waiting and he was wondering, what is he doing? And then he asked his servant, by the way, what is he doing? And then he said that he's actually, there are two very beautiful dancing girls. He's teaching them how to dance for his drama, for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. So he's personally teaching them in a solitary place in his garden. And we understand there's the Shastra injunction, one should never be alone, even with one's mother or sister. So then, you know, what to speak of, you know, these beautiful dancing girls. So Ramananda Rai was alone with them in a solitary place in the garden, teaching them how to basically perform for his drama. And not only that, he was personally massaging their body with oil. And after that, he was bathing them. And then he was dressing them and putting ornaments on them. So from this we can understand that he's actually a self-realized soul. He's on the pure, spontaneous, Krishna-conscious platform. Otherwise, and it's described there that, you know, for him, his mind was not at all changed. It was just unchanged. It was as if he's dealing with wood or stone. So obviously this cannot be imitated. So he was actually considering himself a maidservant of the gopis, though externally he was in the body of a man. And then Pradyumna Mishra went back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after that, Ramananda Rai came and he said, I apologize for not being able to see you because I was not aware of your presence, so please forgive me. And he said, anyway, it's getting late, so I have to go back. And then he went back and narrated what took place to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, this is the position of Ramananda Rai. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taking our position, though he's God himself, he said, when I hear the name of a woman, I feel changes in my body and my mind. Then who could remain unmoved by the sight of a woman? So this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to, actually, he's actually instructing us through this incident. So we see even, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, quoted this verse describing how Ramananda Rai achieved this state. So he said, when one hears or describes with great faith the pastimes of Lord Krishna, such as his rasa dance with the gopis, the disease of lusty desires in his heart, and the agitation caused by the three modes of nature are immediately nullified, and he becomes sober and silent. So we also read in the Krishna book in various places, it said that if one is, you know, getting lusty desires, one should read the Rasa Leela, Krishna with his gopis. But also it's mentioned that if one still feels agitated while reading that, one should stop. Because that means we are not ready for that medicine yet. So like, you know, you go to a pharmacy, there's so many medicines over there. So, but we should know which one is actually meant for us, which one is prescribed for us. So sometimes, you know, that medicine might not be prescribed for us. So we have to still, you know, work on the basics, which are also quite elevated. So another example of a liberated soul is Shukdev Goswami. So Shukdev Goswami, after coming out of the womb and, you know, straight away he went to the forest, and his father Vyasadeva was running after him. And you know, he was a Paramahamsa, and he was completely naked, and he was you know, wandering the forest, and he came across this lake or pond where these beautiful damsels were bathing. They were not wearing any clothes, and he walked past. So they did not cover themselves, because Shukdev Goswami is an Atmaram. So he is self-satisfied. He is not attracted by the material glitter or glamour. So he was not in the least agitated, and he kept walking. So, but even we see that these liberated devotees, they follow the, generally most of the liberated devotees, they follow the rules and regulations of the scripture, so that to set an example for others. So there is this pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there is this pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where there was a Mataji who was singing the Gir Govind prayers of Jayadev Goswami. And so, which were the intimate affairs of the Lord. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that, he went into ecstasy. And he wanted to embrace the person who was singing this song out of ecstasy. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is running through the bushes, his cloth is getting torn, and he's running to embrace. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi. He's in the role, playing the role of a sannyasi. So sannyasi, you know, he should not embrace a woman. And then his servant Govinda saw that, and he ran after Mahaprabhu, and he said, "That is actually a woman singing." And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back to external consciousness, and he said, "Thank you very much, you have saved my life." So in this way we can see that how even the Supreme Lord follows the rules and regulations so that to set an example for others. So then, you know, what to speak of us, how careful we have to be. So we have to be very careful in our association with the opposite sex. Why? Because Shastra says, Pumsa Sriya Mithuni Bhava Metam Tayor Mitho Hidaya Grante Mahu Atho Griya Shetra Sutta Apta Vitae Janasya Moho Yam Aham Mameti. So the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. In other words, sex life is the very basis of material existence. So by sex life in all the species, one is actually, as in especially in the human form, one is held down in the material world. So, because the result of that is, of course, this is referring to Griha Meris. The result of that is one gets fully bewildered and forgets the purpose of life. So, when a man and a woman unite, the bondage becomes very strong and there is like an interlock. Or this hard knot, you know, like sometimes you tie a knot and then you can't untie it. It's very difficult to untie. So the knot of sex life is like that. It's very, very difficult to untie, and one becomes entangled in so many things and starts the bodily designations expand. So but in Vedic civilization, the goal is actually to cut that through the different ashrams. It's not to aggravate that. But we see when there is lack of Krishna consciousness, the situation gets worse. It's like adding fuel to the fire. And you can see all over the world, you know, those who are not in Krishna consciousness, they're so bewildered by their family situation. You know, whether it's in India or anywhere, whether it's a pious family or... But still, you know, they are caught up in the house. Their priority is the home. So, you know, the economics, and they completely forget about the purpose of life, which is actually spiritual emancipation. So it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam that man is like butter and woman is like fire. So there always has to be a distance, otherwise the butter will melt. It's just a matter of time. It's not why, but it's just a matter of time. So in our dealings, there always has to be a respectful distance. It has to be formal, business-like. And we should not trust our mind and senses, because they are our very worst enemy. It is described like the mind and senses, there is a hunter who has captured his prey. So that prey is compared to the mind and senses. So if you have captured a dangerous animal, then an intelligent person will keep an eye on that animal, because if that animal gets loose, it can actually kill you. So our mind and senses are like that. We don't have to put our trust in them, because they can actually kill us. If we put our trust in our enemy, so we are actually in a very, very weak situation. One is finished. So therefore, Vedic culture restricts the association between men and women. So in Vedic culture, Varnashram Dharma, there is no free mixing. But today's culture, today's society is exactly the opposite of Vedic culture. So there is complete intermingling between the sexes. There is free mixing. So, you know, you can go to a park, or you can see, you know, couples are lying down together, embracing each other. Or, you know, you can go to colleges, universities, schools. It's all about, it's just, you know, free association. There is no check to it. You walk down on Swanson Street, you look at the billboards, in the fashion, the way people dress. It is simply to agitate, provoke the sex desire more and more. So that is like adding fuel to the fire. The situation is bad, but it makes it even worse. So this modern civilization is basically an animal civilization. It's animalistic. This free mixing is just like animals. There's no tab to it. So in this day, there's no shyness. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, the purpose, shyness is like the control valve which counteracts the unrestricted mixing between men and women. So, you know, in Kali Yuga, that's thrown out of the window, especially in the West. And they think, you know, what's wrong in mixing, you know, what's wrong in talking or like that? And the union between man and woman is a spiritual affair. You know, we feel God in that intimate connection. I feel God in my heart. You know, what's wrong in that? So this is how we are expressing love, you know, but that's actually lust, as we understand. So these days we see, right from school, you know, boys and girls are mixing freely. And illicit sex starts at the age of 11 or 12. So by the time they reach 18 and 19, they're completely destroyed. Their mind is destroyed. And they are physically also destroyed. There's no determination, there's no strength. They're, you know, spaced out like that. So this is one has to pay a heavy price for sense gratification. It doesn't come cheap. You know, one has to pay the heavy toll on the mind and the body. You know, people actually look old these days. They look as if they're in their 30s, but they're actually in their 20s. So this is the price one has to pay for illicit sex. And the way Kali is working, it's working very systematically and in a very Kali's preaching is very systematic. So Kali has actually destroyed the very fabric of society. So we see, before there was some culture, families were there. Okay, though they didn't know the purpose of life, but still, you know, this unrestricted mixing was not there. So when, you know, people, even when they come to Krishna consciousness, it is easy for them to take up. They're not so much bewildered. They can understand these principles. But now if you talk to someone and, you know, the four regulative principles is like, or if, like on books sometimes, I tell this, when I meet young people, I tell them I'm a monk, and they look at me like, you know, which planet are you from? You know, where are you from, you know? You've been a celibate for, you know, a few years, you know, just like, you know, where are you from? You know, have you lost the goal of life? And they look at you like, you know, you're from some alien. So it's very difficult for people to actually relate to. They can't understand the spiritual principles. And it also gets challenging to present Krishna consciousness. And you know, it leads to so many miseries. You see amongst the politicians, the there's always sex scandals going on amongst the movie stars, and it leads to so many diseases, and there's so much mental suffering, as we see in this case, how Pururava, when Urvasi left him, he's so bewildered that he ran after her naked. Of course, Urvasi is not an ordinary woman. She has come from the body of Naranarayan, and she has bent so many Indras. So, you know, it's understandable why he ran like that. And the result of illicit sex, as is described in the fifth canto, is one ends up in hell. You know, one has to embrace a woman which is, you know, like red hot, like a red hot iron. So, you know, that's the punishment for that. So the whole thing is actually miserable. So as in this pastime of Urvasi and Pururava, so yeah, Pururava was a great king. He's a glorious king. And I'm just trying to remember the pastime. How did he meet Urvasi? Does anyone remember? Oh yeah, she got... Urvasi was actually cursed to come down to earth. And yeah, how did Urvasi came? When Naranarayan Rishi was performing austerities in Badrika Ashram, then Indra got a bit envious. He thought, you know, he'll take my position. So, and then he sent beautiful damsels to bewilder Naranarayan Rishi. And from Naranarayan Rishi, so many, you know, beautiful damsels came, and they actually surrendered, and they thought they made a big mistake. Offense, and he gave them one of those girls. One of them was Urvasi, and yeah, that's how she came into the heavenly planets. And there, from there, she was cursed, and she came down to earth, and then she got attracted by King Pururava, and Pururava also got attracted by her. And in this way, he enjoyed with her for many, many years, and you know, time went like that. And the condition Urvasi made with Pururava was that I'll leave you. There are two conditions. You should prepare offerings for me which are cooked in ghee. And other thing, if I see you naked, you know, apart from the union time, then I'll leave you. And she had two lambs which were very dear to her. So then as time went on, Indra was missing her in the celestial planets. And he sent the Gandharvas to get her back. So the Gandharvas devised a plan. They went and at the dead of night they stole the two lambs. And Pururava didn't do anything about it, and Urvasi chastised him with very harsh words, which hurt his false ego. And she said, like, you're a eunuch, you know, you can't do anything. And then, you know, his false ego got hurt, and he ran after her, naked, not after the Gandharvas. And then, you know, the Gandharvas left the lambs. He picked the lambs and brought them back. But then the Gandharvas illuminated the entire area, and then she saw him coming naked with two lambs. And then she left. And then, so Pururava was in great misery. Like that. And then one day he was roaming in the forest, and there he saw Urvasi. And he pleaded to her, you know, and she agreed, okay, once a year I'll meet you in the forest. And you can have children for me, like that. And also Urvasi instructed him about the nature of material existence, the nature of, you know, materialistic women, and like that he was able to get detachment. And so now where we are in Srimad Bhagavatam is like, you know, he's saying wait, and then he reflects on the situation and he gets detached. So we can see the same situation with like a Bilva Mangala Thakur. He was enlightened by Chintamani. So you know, Bilva Mangala Thakur used to like this prostitute Chintamani, and every day he used to visit her. And once there was this big storm, so he had to cross over this swollen river, and it was a big storm raining, and he's crossing over, and he thought it was a log, but it was actually a dead body. So he held that and crossed over the river, and then he reached the boundary of a house, and he tried to jump over the fence. And what he thought to be a rope was actually a snake. So then still he managed to cross over, and he knocked on the door. And when Chintamani opened the door, she was actually surprised to see him. You know, how come you made it in this condition? And then she said, if you had the same determination to serve Krishna, your life would be perfect. And that's when his Krishna consciousness actually came back to him. So, in this way we can see how Urvasi also enlightened King Pururava. He got detachment. So in the Varnashram Dharma, the whole goal is to restrict this free mixing and to progress in spiritual life. So therefore in Varnashram Dharma we have the four ashramas. This is the Brahmacharya Ashram, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So in three of the ashrams there is no sex life. Brahmachari, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So Brahmachari, complete abstinence. Vanaprastha, no sensual dealings. Sannyas, of course, nothing. And Grihastha Ashram is the license for restricted sex life, like that. So these four ashrams are here. And this is Krishna's system. It's coming from God. Chatur Varnaya Maya System, Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Tasya Kartaram Apivam, Vidya Kartaram Avyam. So this system is actually coming from Krishna. The four orders and four ashramas. For the advancement of the living entity, for the spiritual emancipation. So of the four ashrams, Brahmachari Ashram is the first ashram. And why it is the first ashram is also very important. It's because this is the foundation for all the other ashrams, Brahmachari Ashram. So Brahmachari Ashram is the lifestyle of studying and practicing Brahman. So in which one develops good qualities, characters, good character, etc. So the purpose of Vedic life is to cultivate one's relationship with Krishna, forgotten relationship. And how to get out of this human form of life. So, Brahmachari Ashram is the foundation. If the foundation is not good, then the rest will also not be good. It's like, for example, if one's education in primary school is not good, one can't be good in secondary school or tertiary school. So, though university education might be more prestigious, but if one's basics are not right, one will not be a good professor, or a good university student. So, one needs good grades. So, similarly, the training in the Brahmachari Ashram is the foundation of one's spiritual life. And at least before, it used to start at the age of 5. So we all have started quite late. But, never better than late. So at any point in one's life, when one realizes the importance of Krishna consciousness, one should take it full-heartedly. So what Prahlad Maharaj says. So as Bhaktivedanta Puna Maharaj says, a first class brahmachari becomes a first class grihastha. So it's easier to learn and develop the qualities in the brahmachari ashram to start with, but it can be a bit difficult when one starts Krishna consciousness as a grihastha. It's possible, it's not possible. But it's easier in the brahmachari ashram because one is awarded with the opulence of, the luxury of brahmachari ashram is that one has a lot of time. So, one does not have to engage in economic development. So that frees one from a lot of time. And there is very less intricacies involved. And it's very economical. So, it actually gives one a lot of time to spend for spiritual activities. Hearing and chanting about Krishna. Carrying out the order of the Guru, like that. And serving the temple. So the Brahmachari ashram is Swadhyaya. So it's not only cultivating knowledge but also to put it into practice. So both of them have to be there. Understanding the knowledge and at the same time putting it into action. So joining the ashram doesn't mean one studies for 10 hours a day. we might study for a couple of hours. Rest of the time, active engagement in service. Because we have these senses, we are situated in the modes of passion and ignorance. So we have to engage our senses, otherwise we'll just fall down. So we have to cultivate this knowledge and engage in Krishna consciousness activities. So brahmacharis are of two types. There's the Naishtika and there's the Upakurvana. So Naishtika is one who remains brahmachari for his whole life. An Upakarmana is one who takes some training and then after some point of time, he or she gets married. So, but the point is both of them get the same training. The quality of the training is the same, but the level of realization is different. So, the Naishtika, he learns by hearing. By hearing, he is convinced that he doesn't want to, he is convinced about the nature of material existence and he doesn't want to enter into family life. And the Upakarmana has that knowledge, but he's not convinced. So that's the difference. But both have the same understanding. It's like, you know, for example, like before my friends would tell me, you know, they used to go for movies. I would ask them, how was that movie? They would say, oh, it was really bad. It's terrible. And they say, oh, really? I want to, how terrible? I want to go and check it out. So then you come back, oh yeah, it was really terrible. So it's like that. So the Upakarmana is not convinced, but the Naishtika is convinced by hearing. So when the Upakarmana Brahmachari enters into Grihastha Ashram, he knows the difficulties and problems that will come. He's not entering blindly. So this is a very important point. And the whole idea of Grihastha Ashram, it's an ashram, so it's not something to be looked down upon. It's an ashram of purification. And most people will go through that. So, it's an ashram of purification. Where, again, the difference between Grihamethi and Grihastha is that in Grihastha Ashram, Krishna consciousness activities are at the front. Whereas in Grihamethi, maybe they are at the back or they're not even there. So that's why for the Grihastha Ashram, this deity worship is very important. And chanting Hare Krishna, you know, reading the scriptures together and offering prasadam. These four items are very important. So the Upakarmana Brahmachari enters in knowledge. And as he progresses in his Grihastha Ashram, he actually, all what he has studied in the Bhagavatam actually clicks to him. Yeah, actually Bhagavatam was right. Yeah, this is what he was saying was right. Here was right, like this. Then, at the end, the strength of the Grihastha is that he is convinced. He or she is convinced. So they are actually, we see that the Grihasthas in our movement are actually very, very powerful. Those Grihasthas who have properly gone through, they are actually very, very powerful people. They are actually convinced about material existence. So this is to the strength of the Grihasthas. So the Brahmachari has to, at one point, Brahmachari has to decide, you know, whether I'm going to get married or not. One has to make that decision honestly. There's no point carrying on as a Brahmachari if, you know, one's mind gets agitated by seeing some Mataji or, you know, seeing some opulence or some circumstance like that. So better to get married, be honest and continue one's spiritual life rather than causing a mess, you know, later in one's life. So that's like, you know, when we fast. So if we are fasting, we can't fast, better to eat. Otherwise one's mind will be agitated all the time. You know, if you're fasting but all the time you're thinking about food, you know, better to eat and be peaceful and carry on one's service. So this, the same is like in spiritual life. You know, if one can't be as a Brahmacharya, it's not, we don't have to put up this false show of a pretender, then change ashram. So the Grihasthas is higher in the social order. There's Brahmachari, there's Grihasthas. Because the Brahmacharis are like the legs and Grihasthas are considered to be senior because they are providing for the Brahmacharis. They're looking after the Brahmacharis. And they're also contributing God-conscious children into the world. So both ashrams have to respect each other. So, what we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many negative statements, you know, for the Grihamethis. All of these negative statements the purpose of that is to counter our bad habits and illusions. That's the whole idea behind. There are so many we have to be very careful not to, you know, these negative statements can be used against each other, but one has to be very careful. And so the whole purpose of that is to, is to check our bad habits, you know, where we can go wrong. So that's the whole idea behind that. And but we see in Krishna's case that sometimes people think Krishna is a very lusty god. You know, Krishna married 16,000 queens and he had so many gopis. So therefore, Krishna is also like one of us. He's very lusty. But we, as we understand, Krishna is beyond the three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature actually do not affect Krishna. So, you know, one might say, okay, the goddess of fortune is transcendental by nature. But what about when Krishna comes in contact with demons like Jarasandha, Kamsa? You know, they are situated in the three modes of nature. So then he should get contaminated then. But no, Krishna, the three modes of nature, he's in touch with them in the sense that the three modes of nature come from him, but he's not affected by the actions of the three modes of material nature. Krishna is aloof from that. Though when he comes in this world, he's surrounded by them. It's like a lotus flower, you know, on the lotus does not touch the water. And Krishna is Atmaram. Krishna is self-satisfied. So, you know, Krishna does not need anything for his, you know, enjoyment. Example is the queens of Dwarka. They were actually even more beautiful than Urvasi. And it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the queens of Dwarka, when Krishna went back to Dwarka, they greeted him. And that Cupid himself would put down his bow in frustration, bow and arrows, looking at the beauty. And even the tolerant Shiva could get bewildered by them. They were so beautiful. But, and still by their glances and their magical feats, Krishna in the least did not get agitated. So we can see how Krishna is actually, you know, beyond any lusty desires. Krishna does not have any lusty desires. But Krishna was staying with them to reciprocate their service. Because they desire to have a relationship with Krishna in conjugal love, so Krishna was with them to reciprocate their loving devotional service. And if Krishna's devotees, you know, can be Atmaram, then what to speak of Krishna? If Krishna's devotees like Shukdev Goswami can be Atmaram, then, you know, Krishna is unlimited. How can he get bewildered by, you know, how can Krishna be a lusty god? That's not possible. So, any questions, comments? Yes, Martin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sometimes, once I met this person, he knew a bit about the Hare Krishna movement. He had been to Movilamba. And he said, I know your lifestyle. He said, you know, you have no independence at all. You are told what time to eat, which is not true, you know, what to eat, you know, when to wake up, when to sleep, when to get married, who to get married to, and even to produce a child you have to take permission. So then you have no independence at all. Of course, you know, most of that is not true. You know, devotees have independence. But the point is, you can say that if they say, are there any restrictions, if they really want to get into that, you can say, do you have any restrictions in your life? So then they'll themselves say, yeah, you know, we wake up at a, if they are working, they'll say, yeah, you know, I sleep at a certain time, I wake up at a certain time, I do exercise. They themselves are regulated in many ways. to be a good materialist, one has to be regulated. There has to be some level of restrictions. Then you can say, there are some rules which help us to, you know, come to the spiritual platform. You don't need to go into the four regulative principles, but you can just say like that. But if they really want to ask you, then you can explain, you know, if they really want to know. And you can say how meat eating is actually very bad for us. And even successful materialists, like even those who participate in the Olympics, they know that sex life is bad for sports. They have some idea. So, you know, before the event, they won't engage in sex life. So, some of them even restrain for a few months. So, I mean, like that, maybe you can explain to them. Anyone like to add anything to that? Any other questions? Pradyumna. Pradyumna is one of Krishna's sons by Rukmini. Is that right? Yeah. And Pradyumna was also, he was kidnapped, right? Something like that.
Yeah,
He was kidnapped by some Mataji from some other, who got attracted by him, and then I can't remember the pastime. It's there in the Krishna book. If you shed light on that. By a fish, yeah.
And then some student of Samatura, he took the fish from to prepare it, and then Rati, who was the wife of Pradyumna, who was previously cooking, took him out and looked after him. And then he grew up and eventually killed the Asura.
Yeah.
Rati talked again about the mystic powers.
Yeah, they went back to. Yes, Prabhuji.
It's
with everyone. It's not only you.
So, how is them, why is them, and how can we handle it?
Sorry?
How is them in your mind? Why is them in your mind, and how we can handle it?
Okay, how it's coming, why, and how we can control it. So it's there because our real knowledge is covered. Because real knowledge means we are servant of Krishna. Not only to know theoretically, but to act in that status. And to see everything in relationship to Krishna. So, and when we desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, then we are covered by Maya. When we are covered by Maya, then we are in dualities. So the way you can overcome it is by engaging in the process of Krishna consciousness. By understanding this knowledge, engaging in the 9 items of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, doing service, having prasadam, like that, and chanting Hare Krishna, then gradually, we should come back to a real position. And then one is not affected by the dualities. It takes a while for most people. So till then, you have to be very careful. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.